You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, we're going to get to your podcast, but episode. Not yet. Yep. Not yet, because we have a special announcement for October 2018. We're having our first ever national gathering for Gravity Leadership at the end of October, October 26th through 27th, happening in Indianapolis. There's a limited number of tickets.
Yep.
We can only fit so many people in that room, Ben.
Yep.
So Hardman, Ben Hardman, will you give us an idea of, cast some vision about why we would want to come to this event?
Yeah, so our hope is that it becomes much more of a collaborative event than a delivery event. One of the things that we hear often from leaders that we coach and spend time with is, you guys feel like family. I feel like we connect. I feel like I'm not crazy when I'm around you. I feel like we speak the same language.
Yes.
And it feels like family when we're together. And so we kind of wanted to create a family reunion, a pilgrimage of sorts, an opportunity for some like-minded leaders to get in a room and collaborate and talk. And so this year's topic is... what is this year's topic?
Life on mission. How do we articulate it? It's life on mission in a busy world, and so we want to convene some conversations around some of the unhelpful work that trying to convince people to live on mission does. Some of the work that we have begun to experience in terms of like developing practices rather than values for our church. And how all that kind of fits together into living kind of one integrated life.
Yes, and if mission isn't service projects, right, and like drop in evangelistic blast your neighbors, like how do we cultivate a sustained, authentic presence for Christ in our churches, in our neighborhoods, in our world? Well, we're going to have those conversations. We're going to ask questions. Mm-hmm. We're going to there may be some laughs.
Maybe some tears.
Maybe some tears.
I hope so. Not tears. I hope for the laughs.
Okay.
I mean, tears.
I'm hoping for tears, though.
We'll let other people cry.
I'll tell some really sad stories.
Okay.
There you go. Yeah.
I'll tell some bad jokes and make you cry.
Yeah.
And then we're going to have lots of relational time, hanging out in the backyard. So, friends, you can...
Fire pits.
Yes, fire pits. And again, it's going to be, very few people. So...
Yeah.
How do I sign up for this, Ben?
Yeah. If you guys head to gravityleadership.com/gathering, all the information is there. You can register. There's group discounts. So we encourage you to bring friends, bring a team from your church, bring some staff members, bring
your veterinarian,
other pastors that you know.
Your neighbor's kids.
Bring your neighbor's kids. Well, maybe leave them. Maybe leave them. But we're excited about it. There's going to be lots of Q&A. There's going to be lots of discussion, lots of talking over meals, lots of time to reflect and kind of workshop implications for your own life and ministry. Lots of time to talk informally, develop new friendships. It's going to be awesome. gravityleadership.com/gathering, October 26th and 27th. Hope you guys can make it.
See you there. Welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Gravity Leadership is a community of people seeking to live our lives in the orienting center of God's love in the midst of our post-Christian world, learning to lead like Jesus, live on mission, and make disciples. In nature, gravity is the phenomenon that brings stuff together, objects as small as atoms and quarks, and as large as stars and galaxies. We believe the gravity of the Christian life is the love of God revealed in Jesus Christ. The Gravity Leadership Podcast is curated conversations on what it looks like to practically orient our lives and our leadership in the love of Christ, the gravity that holds everything together.
Hey, welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. It's really good. Hey, I'm really grateful that you saw this in your list of podcast episodes that you could listen to right now. And you said, oh, I'll listen to that one. And you pressed play on our podcast episode, and you're here, and you're listening to us. I'm really grateful for that.
Assuming it wasn't an accident.
Right. If it was an accident, just stick with us. Yeah. It's going to be great.
Don't worry.
It's going to be awesome. Hey, we're in the middle of this series where we're talking about what we're learning about women and men leading together in the church. We have been learning tons over the past few years, but also learning tons as we interview people and as we talk on this podcast, as we record these episodes and hear people's stories. We're learning tons and tons as we go. And today, we're going to hear more stories. We've got with us on the podcast, Jeff and Sid Holzclaw.
Hello.
Hey, guys. It's great to have you. It's wonderful to have you with us. And Matt Tebbe is also here.
Yeah.
My co-host.
I'm here.
And co-founder. Little known fact is that Matt and Jeff used to work together at Life on the Vine Church in the suburbs of Chicago way back in the day.
Yes, we did.
Amen.
Yeah. So anyway, Jeff and Sid are friends from a long time ago, and we wanted to interview them about what they're learning about working together. They're both pastors. They've both very recently made a move to the Reformed hub of the United States, right?
Western
Michigan?
Home sweet home.
One of them.
The Christian Publishing Hub of Grand Rapids.
Yeah, Grand Rapids.
Sid, why don't you tell us what
are you guys up to?
And where you are now, introduce kind of what you're doing.
Yeah, well, so our move, it was 2 weeks ago that we left our home of 15 years in Chicago. And we are staying temporarily at a cottage on Lake Michigan in the little town of Montague, which is about an hour outside of Grand Rapids, while we wait for our seller to vacate the house as he's waiting to move into his new house. So he has until September 30th. We're hoping it goes a little sooner than that. In the meantime, we are trying to do schoolwork on the beach, and Jeff and I are trying to start our new job of co-pastoring together at Vineyard North in Grand Rapids, where we are the pastors of families of youth.
So in the meantime, we're really suffering through gorgeous sunsets over Lake Michigan and
stars like you cannot believe.
Wow. Full Milky Way displays. So it's tough.
I'm sorry, guys.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
When God calls.
Makes me think of that movie Silence, you know, those Jesuit missionaries. You guys are probably experiencing.
No, yeah, something like that.
No, it's great. So you guys made this move.
In the sense that it's really quiet. We don't have any traffic.
And the stars, no, probably the stars too,
there are stars in common as well. Yeah. No, that's great, you guys. So we are telling our stories because we're not advocating for certain positions, but we are advocating for having relationships that are redeemed, where men and women can lead alongside each other in ministry, and we can actually have something to offer as Christian leaders to not only our churches and families within those churches, but to the world. So love to hear your stories as you maybe have... You maybe have grown up.
As you've maybe grown, have been getting older. Over
you
the last
maybe
few years.
Changed.
You've maybe changed. So, Sid, will you start off by telling us your story? Like growing up, what was your thought of women in the church, and how has that morphed, shifted, matured as you've gotten older?
Sure. Yeah. So, I actually grew up in a very feminist household. In the sense that my mom was an only child raised by a very strong father who taught her that she could do anything. So she grew up very self-sufficient. And then she had two daughters of her own. And I lost my dad to a car accident when I was a really little girl. And so she was left as a single mom with two kids. And she wanted us to grow up believing that we could do anything and that we could be self-sufficient. So I grew up sort of swimming in the water of a woman can do anything a man can do, and she can probably do it better.
Yeah.
So
that's awesome.
So that's how I grew up. And that was the church that we went to was a Christian Reformed church, and they were sort of at the edge of the envelope of trying to create space for women in ministry. So we were sort of the rebel church in town in the sense that we had female deacons before the CRC Synod said it was okay. We had female elders before it was okay. And then when I left to go to college, we even had a female pastor before it was supposed to be okay. So that's sort of the church environment I grew up in. So I guess I grew up with the idea that women can be in ministry, but I also grew up with the idea that nobody else thought that that was true. So the fact that it was like, it was a rebellious, frowned upon thing, and it was sort of a spitting in your face, we're going to do it anyway kind of approach. And I understand why it needed to be that way, probably in that, or I understand why why it was fought that way. But growing up in that environment sort of turned me off to the whole idea of church ministry. But then actually later on, which I can get to later, but I actually later on, I remembered that in middle school, when I was making my profession of faith, the mentor I was working with asked me what I thought I might want to do, you know, with God in the future. And I said, I think God might be calling me to be a pastor, which I only remembered much later in life, because I promptly forgot that during a period of rebellion when I walked away from the church and everything that it had to do with. But it was in my 20s, I came into coming back to the faith. I was actually teaching at a school. I had gotten a job at a Christian Reformed school because I knew how to speak the language well enough to get my foot in the door. And I had to teach through the Old Testament, through the book of Judges was, you know, the part that I remember most. And I remember the cycle of, as I'm teaching through this book of the people are constantly turning against God and God is constantly saving them from all of their disasters and giving them another chance. And it was during that period of time when I went, oh, maybe God will give me another chance. And the community that I fell back into in that period of time was a Reformed, charismatic, complementarian community. So
one of those.
Yeah, very strong perspectives of what men and women, what their roles were, how those roles were supposed to be played out in relationship to one another. And but I would say that is exactly the kind of community that I needed to be in, because up until that point, I didn't have any respect for men, none. Because I had grown up with that idea that women can do anything and they can do it better. And so it took that complementarian community where there was actually a very loving idea of headship, in the sense that headship is the man dies first. And then the woman follows suit. So it was that kind of community that helped me actually gain respect for men being ministers of the gospel, because up until then, I don't think I really believed that. So that may be a very different story than a lot of women have, but that's the story I carried around, is that like, we don't need men except for procreation, until I came into this community where I was like, wow, men actually have a lot to offer to the church. And then that threw me into a tailspin of, maybe men should be the ones leading the church, because the way that I saw church happening before was pretty aggressive, pretty strident. And then in this community, it's much more grace-filled, much more merciful. So maybe women have no business leading in the church, because look what it looked like before. So so then it was a long road to get back to a place where I could actually believe that God was still calling me into ministry like he had been when I was in middle school.
Well, so, you kind of pit stopped with, well, I'll just marry a pastor.
Yeah.
That'll probably, I'll be a pastor's wife, and that'll
sure,
be.
Sure. And then I can just sort of help without actually having a role. So yeah, I kind of did fall in that. It was really Jeff who kept calling me into the reality of, no, you actually have a ministry that's uniquely yours and not just attached to mine. But yeah, it was really, like it was my brothers that were able to call me forth back into that were able to call me into ministry after that season of believing I was disqualified because ministry got ugly.
Yeah.
You know, when women were in charge in my growing up. Wow. So
that's unique in terms of the stories we've heard.
Yeah. I haven't heard anything like that.
And I think really important part of this conversation. Thanks,
yes.
Sid.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. How about Jeff? How about for you? I know that you also grew up.
You also age. As the years go by, you seem to be aging at the same pace as the rest of us.
So you, tell us a little bit about how you grew up and your thoughts and experiences about
this. Yeah, I was raised in California, Bay Area, really friendly fundamentalist is what I would say. Dispensational, actually. Oh, wow. So I don't know how many dispensationalists you've had on the show yet, but I would like to add to that number. But I was raised like very conservative, very, and but very friendly. And so there wasn't like this super bashing of like egalitarian, at least not that I picked up. There wasn't like there wasn't a bashing of all the things we're against. It was just a strong statement of the things we're for.
So I'm picturing, Jeff, I'm picturing like Ned Flanders, basically.
Friendly fundamentalist.
Actually, I think that's pretty close. Yeah.
Like, sweater vests.
You're like, you can be accidentally really offensive, but not purposely really offensive.
Right, yeah. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I got it. That's me. Everybody listening now knows me.
I was also thinking the friendly fundamentalist would make a great name for like a super hipster like bar.
Yeah.
In like downtown Austin. Right. The friendly fundamentalist.
Right.
Or at least an IPA.
Right. Yeah. Maybe it's just one beer from a brewery.
The Grand Rapids is the beer capital of the U.S.
There's a lot of good beer up there.
Yeah. So, okay. So, right. So I was raised very complementarian, but not in the negative sense. You know, my mom was very strong. I knew a lot of strong and independent women. Certainly my sister was very strong and independent. So I kind of had kind of this implicit kind of male headship, men lead the church kind of practice theology, but then like kind of a real strong experience of, well, you know, women do all sorts of things. So like in the community that I met Sid with, I was complementarian and the group was complementarian and we were dating kind of in that framework, but really kind of starting to question it a little bit as we got engaged. And then I went off to seminary and it was kind of this weird dual trajectory of in seminary, I fell in with this group that was like very much questioning that whole perspective. And we fell in with the church that definitely questioned that perspective. And so, which was Life on the Vine, and we went there before I went on staff. And so there was kind of this, for me, and then I was married to a real strong woman in Sid who I thought had all these great gifts. And I was like, how come, like, where's her place in the church for all these things? So there was kind of just through just being immersed in a different kind of community, and then really being married to Sid, being like, well, there's no reason why she's not a pastor and I am a pastor. Like, that's ridiculous. So it was kind of a slow process. I guess I'll kind of skip to the end, but my experience is the typical, especially white male experience of, oh, you have your own feeling of calling and you're white and you're male. Well, we'll give you lots of opportunity to explore that. And then, you know, so you get all the support, which is usually totally unjustified. And then women who have tons of anointing and blessing and gifts get hardly any opportunity then to explore that. And so like Sid and I lived into this situation where I have all this opportunity heaped upon me and she's kind of like, you know, nobody's looking to her for anything besides like potlucks and piano and things, you know, pastor's wife.
And children's ministry.
Children's ministry. Yep. Good.
Which she does fantastically. So it's really hard to kind of kick that stereotype when she does those things. So. Yeah. So anyway, so that's kind of the...
And I do play the piano, by the way.
Wow. I know, I've heard it.
It does all of it.
Living into all of it.
Her potluck game is also strong.
Yeah.
I mean, you're a trifecta pastor's wife, Sid, is what we're saying.
Triple threat.
Yeah, so this is interesting. So both of you grew up with strong women models. So a woman leading in like her strength wasn't scandalous or brand new or even...
But I would say that like... The women leading that I saw growing up, and of course, I just want to first of all give the caveat that we all imagine our childhoods differently than they probably were. Like my interpretation of reality is probably not what was actually going on.
Sure.
But I interpreted the environment that in where like every woman that I saw leading seemed to be having an agenda. You know, like she wasn't, it was really that there was something behind what she was saying or doing that was like furthering the cause of women. More than it was necessarily a like a pure embodiment of the gospel, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
So and I would say for me, like I didn't have any sort of imagination of what it looked like to be truly feminine and spirit empowered, because the women that I saw leading were much more of the stereotypical like tomboyish, like, and I understand now with compassion why she did what she did, but the first female pastor in our church, she would wear this black choir robe every Sunday because she didn't want people picking apart what she was wearing, which I understand.
Oh, man.
Right.
But because of that, it was almost as if she had covered up any semblance of her femininity. Hmm. And she was literally like a talking head. And so she wasn't an embodied woman. She was trying to sort of not be female while still, like, it was, I mean, and I have so much compassion for all the reasons that she did what she did. But at that point in time, sure. to me, it looked like she was trying to be a man.
Right.
And so it wasn't until I saw Cherith Fee Nordling speak at Missio Alliance, totally feminine, totally woman, completely powerful, filled yes. with the spirit,
yes.
that I went, oh my goodness, that's what it can look like to be an empowered, spirit-filled woman who speaks with authority.
Hmm.
That's fascinating.
Yes.
We had another friend of ours, Tara Beth Leach, on our podcast, and she also articulated, for her, it was Mandy Smith. I know you know
right.
Mandy as well. She,
yeah.
And she saw Mandy at that same gathering, Sid, leading and operating as a, she was
kind of like the host or the MC.
Yeah, the MC of the
conference.
And for her, her testimony is, I finally kind of saw myself
mm-hmm.
in Mandy in a way that felt, you know, this is kind of a tricky word, but felt authentic and real rather than a show, or I'm hiding something, or I'm pretending to be yeah. somebody I'm not.
Right. Yeah. Because I think the thing that maybe men don't remember is that you guys have like thousands of people
right.
to give you ideas of like, yes, I'm kind of like that. I'm not really like that. That's kind of like me. That's kind of like, but we don't have that. And
right.
so like, there aren't that many women that we can watch and learn from and give us an imagination, really. Yeah. And so it wasn't until Cherith gave me that imagination for what it could look like to be yeah. a spirit-filled, powerful woman who wasn't pushing an agenda.
Yeah. And I hear you saying, too, that freed you then from this other, like you'd experienced that sort of modeling in a negative way. Where
right.
you saw a woman doing something that you thought, I don't resonate with.
Here's
that.
Here's what I don't want to be.
I don't resonate with that. I don't want to be that.
Right. Yeah.
But there's an amount, and I hear you also saying like you spent some time sort of resisting that as well. Then
mm-hmm.
that actually became embedded in your theology, and you thought, well, maybe that's why women aren't supposed to lead. Until
well, yeah,
you saw this embodied example. Yeah.
Yeah, and then combine that with the fact that I am an Enneagram 8, which means that there is a lot of power always waiting to get out.
Mm.
And so, you know, there, and I would, about the power thing too, is that, that was a big, really big revolution for me when I learned to look at power different as a good thing, because I will say like the men in my life were always like, and because I've been in an Anabaptist, ethos, you know, the idea is like, you're always giving away power. Power is a bad thing. You never want power. You never want to mm-hmm. grasp power. You never mm-hmm. want to use power. You always give your power away. Well, that was always kind of confusing for me because I don't think I have natural power like men do. And so when I read Mary Kate Morse, she wrote a book on, I think it's like, what is it? Making Room for Leadership. It's like power, space, and influence. I think that's it. And she talked about like how, if we think about power like an economic system, there's the economic systems of like, everybody believes that there's plenty, the economics of plenty, where like, there's plenty of stuff out there. Just go grab your own. This is mine. You go get yours. And then there's the economy of like a more communal economy where there's a limited number of resources. And these resources need to be for all of us. And we need to figure out how to distribute them and use them wisely.
Hmm.
And she used that to talk about power and how like in the Western world, and especially, you know, many men live with the idea of like, well, this power is mine. You go get your own. And she talked about power being more like there's only a limited amount of power within a group of people. Hmm. And the people in that group decide who they're going to give their power to, who they're going to entrust with their power. And then that power sort of gathers in the one or two people that they have entrusted with that power. And so that was so helpful for me because Jeff always calls me a reluctant leader because I wouldn't lead until it became clear that nobody else was going to. And
yeah.
I was sort of like left to like, okay, well, if nobody else is going to do this, I guess I'll do it. And I finally saw that what was happening is that people were entrusting me with power. And I was abusing that by denying that I had any power and refusing to use that power on behalf of the good of the whole group.
Hmm.
And it wasn't until I read that book that I was like, oh my goodness, power is a good thing. Power is actually neutral, right? It can either be abused or it can be used well. And so it was like, when I realized that, then it was like, oh, people are actually handing me power because they trust me. And when I refuse to pick up that power and use it for the good of the group, I'm actually abusing the trust they've placed in me.
Hmm.
And so when I figured that out and was able to be like, okay, these people trust me, I can use my power because they've given it to me. And then that's, I think, when ministry really sprang open for me, and when I was really able to operate in the power and the authority of the Spirit, because I was no longer afraid of power.
Right.
So that was a pretty huge shift for me.
Yeah. So it's like the icon you had in your mind was a certain kind of abusive power.
I was surrounded by people who never wanted to have the power because they were trying to be sanctified and down their lives.
Right. That was their own sanctification.
Right. My sanctification needed to look like being willing to take the power. Yeah.
Yeah.
Willing to carry the power.
Yeah. Yeah. Your sanctification worked in the opposite direction.
Exactly.
And so, man, that's really fascinating. Really helpful to hear.
Yeah. How about Jeff, as you, there's 74. Yeah, can we just have a moment of silence for Mary Kate Morse?
She's still with us.
And cheers, Madeline.
Yeah. They're all still alive.
We don't know, though, when you'll be listening to this podcast, maybe sometime in the future.
2,000 years in the future.
It doesn't make for a great podcast, but I'm thinking a lot about what you just said, Sid. Jeff, I'd love to hear your reflections on this as well. I think Sid's given us a helpful framework to think about. All of us have relationship to power and influence and authority, and our sanctification or our maturing as followers of Jesus can follow different trajectories. Some of us need to lay down the power. Some of us need to take up the power. How, in particular, I know that you and I co-pastored together, then you co-pastored with your wife, then you've co-pastored with other women too. Like, what have you learned about leading alongside women, not in sort of an indifferent or ignorant way, but in an engaged, empowering way? What are some of the things you've discovered as you've done that?
Yeah, well, so I'll kind of maybe get back to the power question or the, how do you carry your cross as a leader? I'll kind of get back to that in a roundabout way, but I think my first lesson, not necessarily related to with Sid, was connected with leadership development. How do you identify and develop leaders? And for good or for bad, I think, I was kind of raised in the sink or swim model of leadership development, which is, people that God is calling, they will hear God's call, they'll respond to it, then they'll kind of offer themselves. Then you entrust them in small areas of ministry, and as fruitfulness is identified, then you can trust them in more, and they'll kind of be developed through a coaching initiative kind of framework. And so that was kind of how I fell in, or just kind of in my own life. And I'm the friendly fundamentalist, but I have these deep streams of very drivenness. So I can be very driven while also being seeming like mellow and laid back. And so I kind of imputed that on other people. Like, well, when I see other people functioning the way I function in life, then I'll know that they're probably leadership material or being called into ministry and things like that. And so after a couple of years, I found that that's not a great method just for about anybody.
Not even for those of us who are driven. It's a pretty bad method. Yeah.
But two, I found that that's especially does not apply for women, is that women need a lot more support. This is culturally socially, in the sense of like they're not given a lot of affirmation in general. So they're like affirmation sales that are blowing them across the seas of, ministry chaos is not that strong. Mm. That they're not given a lot of kind of natural resources or opportunities, so their tanks are not as full. And they're just, not to make extreme statements, but, women are more relationally connected, intuitively connected. And if you're not connecting with them, then they're going to internalize that as either something being wrong or disapproval or failure. And that'll cause them to just maybe distance themselves or remove themselves from ministry. So the kind of sink or swim method is just horrible for women. And so I learned that kind of early on, like, oh, if we're going to identify and develop women, then we need to totally change, or at least I needed to totally change how I did that. Mm-hmm. The other thing is then also, how do you create relational systems that women can be a part of? Kind of like what Sid said about like preaching and seeing a woman preach that fully brings her, femininity is, a personality men can create decision-making, just meeting protocols, just all sorts of systems that are very alienating to women. And so how do you kind of keep emotions? Like, is it okay to cry in a meeting? Like, you know, this is like a fundamental question. Is it okay to cry in a meeting, or have you ruined the meeting? And so like, you know, and women will internalize this as, I'm not allowed to cry in a meeting. Even tears of joy, tears of passion, or tears of sorrow. Like, that's out of place in a pastoral meeting, right? Go figure.
Yeah, let's pause here for a second, Jeff. I want to pause. I want to cut you off.
Okay.
Because I think that's a specific artifact that has been shaped by what I would say a toxic and deficient masculinity.
Absolutely. Amen to that.
That we foist, like, that. I don't know if we're like, you know, hey, rule number one of this meeting is no crying. Like, we don't have to actually say that, but it's
because everybody knows it.
Everybody knows it.
Yeah.
And if somebody cries, what happens? People get uncomfortable. The person who cries apologizes profusely and feels tons of shame. Yeah. And that's how you know you've broken the rule.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah.
And the only emotion you're allowed to show as a man in a meeting is anger, because that means you're passionate. But if a woman shows anger, that means I won't just fill in the itchy words.
There's different names. There's different names than passionate.
Yeah, right. And so there's a total double standard when it comes to which emotions can be shared and what they mean by gender. So all these,
I hear the point there. Sorry, Jeff. One more. I just want to make sure people are hearing the point. Like, it isn't that men are inherently this way and women are inherently another way. It's that socially speaking, we've been formed and shaped by a toxic masculinity, toxic patriarchy into these places, which necessitates dealing with it in the ways that you're talking about, right, Jeff?
Right.
That's what you're saying. Great. All right. Keep going.
Okay. So what else am I saying? Ben?
I can't remember. What else were you saying?
Well, no, I think this is important. There's, you know, so we could take probably 17 things if we had time, but like, our relationship to emotion and what emotion does in a community is one of those invisible barriers that keeps women like on the sidelines and margins of leadership spaces. Mm. Unless we name it and own it as men, as the gatekeepers, if you will, to the leadership spaces, like, we can't ever do anything about it. It runs the show unless we explicitly name it. Right? So as men, we need to start naming that we have five emotions: happy, hungry, horny, angry, and tired. And like, at least two or three of those things aren't even emotions. Yeah. Right? They're just like biological chemical responses. So like,
hunger is an emotion.
Okay.
That's definitely
maybe hangry would be hangry. Five hangry. And a half.
Exactly.
Right? But no, like, that's, I mean, we're stifled and stilted as men. We have no access to our emotional life. And what happens then is not that we're less emotional. Right. It's that repressed and stifled emotions run the show without us knowing about it.
Yeah.
And then from that repressed, stifled place, we're like, well, she can't lead because obviously she can't keep her composure in a difficult situation. Like, I can't. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, you've just blown the doors off.
No, so
therefore,
like,
she's disqualified for ministry because she started crying, you know?
There we go. And there's another thing that women deal with, is that like, people are always looking at the one woman who's leading and going, that's why it's either okay or it's not okay.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and the difficulty is,
it's funny. Nobody looks at Bill Hybels and goes, that's why white men can't lead the church. That right there. That's why no more white men as pastors.
Yeah.
Nobody did that.
Nope.
Right. And so there's a lot of things. Just to go jump back to what Sid said about like the power and things like that. I know, like, you know, for people like us, and I'm assuming like the listeners in the podcast, you know, the men listening are trying to take seriously, what does it mean to have power or privilege? Sure. How to divest themselves of it? But the hard lesson I've had to learn in relationship to Sid, but then also other women, is their internal narrative has almost nothing to do with that. So like, we're all called to be conformed to Christ. We're all called to pick up our crosses and follow him, to die daily and these types of things. But the idea of dying to yourself as a white male who's been given probably way too much power and opportunity, who then needs to divest it and throw it in other streams, is my version of carrying the cross in a leadership kind of function. But that almost has nothing, you know, that almost speaks to Sid and other women in that does no good work, because she actually needs to say, hey, I have power and I need to give it.
Yeah.
I need to give my power to the group by affirming things that I see.
Yeah.
But you, Jeff, or you other white men, need to need to relieve yourself of power by not saying things. And this is actually the difference that I've found is like a lot of times I've trained myself to try to offer my opinion last in a group or to offer my ideas for a ministry situation last in a group, because if I offer it too quick, it just runs the table. But with women or especially with people of color, it's kind of like, I don't need to do that. Frankly, my idea probably sucks anyway. So why should it run the table? Mm. But the internal narrative that Sid, you can jump into this. The self-talk is that women already have the self-talk of my idea is probably stupid. Yes. Or people of color have the self-talk, you know, of like this idea doesn't fit or it's not going to work. Yeah. Right. So their carrying of the cross actually means saying no to that voice. I'm like waving my hands emphatically for those of you who can't see me, saying no to that voice and then serving the community by offering their idea. But I serve the community by not offering my idea.
Yes.
Right. And so it's a totally different thing. So Sid, do you want to jump in and add to that?
Well, can I give a picture real quick of what happened? You got really animated there, Jeff. You ripped your shirt off, stood on your chair.
Yeah. And you pulled all my hair out,
shaking back and forth.
Yeah,
your fist
frothing
at the mouth.
It was incredible.
Just want to fill the picture in.
So, worst case scenario,
as friendly fundamentalist,
With you never
frenzied friendly
frothy,
fundamentalist.
Yeah, strangely, you ripped off his shirt and there was a sweater vest underneath, and we're like, "What?" Anyway, and then worst case scenario is our attempt at helping other people to be sanctified, where our sanctification is laying down power, that can actually feel and seem oppressive to others who, like, they need to move in the opposite direction. But if all they're heard is like, no, you need to lay down, you need to go to the cross, you need to
lay down your ego,
lay down your ego, like all that stuff that's important for us, it actually feels oppressive to women. Yep. Or people of color. Yeah.
Yep. I would agree. Because usually like when I'm listening to, especially during brainstorming sessions, a lot of times the idea I want to offer, I know is going to sound so harebrained and out of the box that I don't really want to offer it because it's just so far outside of what everybody else is talking about. But when I do offer it, and like now that I'm trying to live more into the power that this, you know, the power of the spirit, like when I do offer it, usually people are like, oh, wow, like we really need to think about that. That's a really good idea, but it takes so much courage to offer it because I know it's going to sound like one of these things is not like the other, you know? Like,
yeah,
it's almost like I know Mandy Smith talks about like translating, right? Like women always have to translate the language that men speak so that we can understand it, but we rarely expect men to translate us, you know? So like being able to speak and say like, I know you don't really understand me, but you know what? Deal with it. I'm always translating you. You can translate me once in a while.
Yes.
And like, we don't really do that.
Yes. Ben and I were talking about this earlier today, that women, we'll just talk about women here, not persons of color, other minority or people marginalized, but just like women.
Let me just say, I'm speaking for myself. I keep saying women. I should just say I.
Right.
Because not all women are like me.
What you're describing, Sid, is that you had to develop, because you're operating and dealing in masculine male spaces, you've had to develop this deep empathy and sensitivity and connection and self-awareness and how to navigate sticky places, and you're always doing this translating. That is an incredibly necessary leadership competency.
Yes.
That most men who never become aware of like the hegemony of their presence and like how this culture is fully shaped by their preferences and desires, they never have to translate anything. Because I'm just objectively looking at things, and we're just speaking like it is. Yeah. You know what I mean? As a bunch of dudes,
and they don't realize they're actually being deferred to. Space is being made for them, right?
Yeah,
we don't realize that, and so like, but that's actually one of the leadership competences we actually train people to do.
Yeah.
And most of the men are very unfamiliar with it, but like a lot of the women are naturals at it.
Because well, and I think that's why it's so important for men and women to minister alongside one another, because both are needed so desperately. Yeah. And I just want to throw another name. I mean, Carolyn Custis James and her work with women as the Azer warrior has also been really transformational for me, in the sense that women speak words of courage. They speak identity into men. You know, they say, this is who you are. Continue to be that, like to call forth, like, you are a whole person. You do have emotions. I give you permission to feel things and to, you know, like to be able to speak those words of life into our brothers, I think is a gift that women offer. Like the friendships that I have with men who are pastors, I feel like they are willing to share things with me and say things to me and feel things in my presence that they don't feel the permission to feel or say when they're around other men. And I feel like that's such a valuable gift that women can offer to men in leadership, is that, you know, to create a different kind of space where, like, it's okay for you to be fully human and not live in this toxic masculinity world that is expected of you.
Yeah.
And I think that's a, awesome. Like a huge, like, if I could speak to the sisters who are listening here, and maybe Sid, you could add to this. Like, I would just say, you know, please be bold with your brothers in ministry, because we really need it. Like, Sid has this like side ministry of going to conferences, asking men, how are they doing? And they just start weeping because, you know, it's like us as dudes, we, you know, like I see my pastor friends that I only see a couple years at a time, you know, and we hug, how's it going, right? Yeah. But we're not always going deep, you know, but like, I think the sisters, like, you know, you can get there a little quicker with us, and, you know, and it, we need it. So I don't know.
That's good.
Well, I'll just say this as we close. Sid, your friendship and leadership in my life has been a gift. I am who I wouldn't be without you. how's that for a convoluted compliment? Yeah. And I really appreciate your giftedness. So glad that you are stepping into that.
Yes.
Yeah. I benefit. I know Ben's benefited.
I have too.
Jeff probably does. Who knows? No, Jeff definitely does as well. And this church that you guys are just starting at, they will definitely benefit. I'd love to have you guys back on.
Yeah.
Because I think there's more conversation to have on developing an imagination for how to be alongside someone who isn't your spouse, right? Hmm. How do we develop healthy friendships? Because I think a lot of the narrative about men and women in the church is, how do we keep away from bad things happening?
Sure. Yep.
But what have you learned on how to cultivate good things happening in a friendship? So would you guys be willing to come back and chat about that?
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Sweet. And we could talk more, you know, maybe it's a super niche audience, but more of like ministering as husband and wife. We got doozies of stories on that.
I'd love to hear those stories too.
I would too. Yes. I mean, I tell stories about ministering with Ben. He's my ministry spouse.
Yeah.
But it's not the same.
It's not the same.
Not the same.
Because we're both dudes.
Yep. So. Yeah. Well, you guys, bless you.
Yeah, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And being willing to share some of your experiences with us.
We'll put all those resources you named, Sid, in the show notes if you want to get those books and those authors. We'll do that for you.
Sure.
Great.
Peace.
See you next time.
All right, bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Leadership Podcast. If you found it helpful, please let us know by leaving a rating or review on iTunes or wherever you review podcasts. You can also email us at podcast@gravityleadership.com to ask a question or suggest a topic for future episodes. And join our online community for free at gravityleadership.com/join. You'll get our latest content delivered straight to your inbox, as well as an email most Fridays with curated links to articles we found interesting or helpful throughout the week. To join us, go to gravityleadership.com/join.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.